Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Rejoice, boys and girls, Outkick Universe, Outkick Nation. On a Friday, NFL training camps are officially underway. Your long, dark national nightmare without football officially over. Have to go all the way back to Tom Brady winning yet another Super Bowl against, sorry, Rams fans, you guys. And now we are once more in the time when everyone is hopeful. And in particular, I have got six players that I think are integral storylines as we begin the 2019 season. And I think these six players are going to be really indicative of what kind of season we get. Four of them are quarterbacks. Two of them are running backs. Let me just dive in here right off the jump and tell you who I think is worth paying attention to. First of all, the four quarterbacks. Let's talk about them. There are a lot of quarterbacks out there that we know are good, right? No real reason to talk about them. I feel like Tom Brady, could he be in Miami? Certainly. Could Patrick Mahomes be in Miami? Certainly. Could Drew Brees? Could Phillip Rivers maybe get to his first Super Bowl? Certainly. There are a lot of guys out there who have been to Super Bowls before that we know have what it takes to potentially get there again. There are also, similarly, a lot of young guys that we still don't know very much about, but we feel like, hey, they at least have control of a team. For instance, I don't know what to expect from Baker Mayfield this year. I think he's going to be really good, but we know that the Browns are built around him right now. Sam Darnold is the same way. Whether you believe in him or not, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, both the exact same too, right? All four young quarterbacks that their teams are building around them. I would rank them Baker, Sam, and then I don't really feel very good about Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. Both, interestingly enough, are running quarterbacks. But we know that their teams are at least giving them an opportunity to succeed, but also that they're too young. And in year two, it's unlikely that we're suddenly going to know everything about them. Now, maybe one of these guys is going to come out and have a Patrick Mahomes-like year where we say, wow, I can't believe how good they are. Maybe not. You know, the Andrew Lucks of the world, guys who are still young-ish, I would say, we know are really good. Then you got the aging gunslingers, the Matt Ryans. Amazingly, Cam Newton kind of becoming an aging guy. But to me, there are four quarterbacks that this season will effectively decide years and years of their future. And those four, in no particular order, Dak Prescott. Now, I think Dak's pretty good to get a long-term deal. But I think that Dak this year, as he really kind of rolls, he won a playoff game last year. The Dallas Cowboy defense looks really strong. Amari Cooper, one of the great trades of all time. We're going to get to Ezekiel Elliott because he's one of my six guys that I'm most intrigued by as the season begins. But Dak Prescott, I feel like, is going to get a big contract, probably, unless the wheels come off this year. Doesn't seem like the wheels are going to come off. I enjoy watching Dak play, but I think this is the year where we're really going to find out, is he an elite quarterback or is he just a pretty decent quarterback with a pretty solid team around him? We are going to learn an awful lot about Dak Prescott this year, and in particular, we're going to learn how much are the Dallas Cowboys going to give him, because I'm fascinated to see what happens with Dak, Amari, and Zeke all expecting big contracts going forward. Jerry Jones wants to believe he's got Aikman, he's got Irvin, and he's got Emmitt Smith all over again. Does he? I think this year will tell us a lot about how good Dak can be. So he's at the top of my list for guys that I can't wait to see how they're going to do. Other top of my list at the quarterback position, Marcus Mariota, and Jameis Winston. This is year five for both. Mariota is left tackle now. We'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. Taylor Lewan is out. Jameis Winston, he's got a brand new coach. Bruce Arians coming in, trying to remake him. Byron Leftwich, they're trying to make it clear that Jameis Winston is the franchise quarterback of Tampa Bay. There's nobody else there that you really need to be afraid of. Fitzpatrick has moved on further south. He's down in Miami. Fitzmagic may or may not exist. But is Jameis Winston the guy going forward with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? And is Marcus Mariota the guy going forward with the Tennessee Titans? Not joking when I'm saying those two guys right now are playing seasons worth potentially $150 million. They could still end up $100 million plus guys getting multi-year contracts for years ahead, or they could be on the scrap heap of quarterbacks in this league, moving on to a backup role, scrambling for another opportunity. The verdict is still out on both men. Massively important seasons for Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston. I know it's only year two, but I got another quarterback for you, Josh Rosen. I know it's only year two, and I know he hasn't started very many games, but we had an unprecedented situation in Arizona. You got a quarterback who was a first-round pick, a top-10 guy, who is just basically given away in exchange for another first-round quarterback. We have never seen this happen before, guys. We've never seen a team invest in a quarterback with this high of a pick and then in the next year decide, you know what, we're done with them and draft first-round quarterbacks in back-to-back years. Now Rosen is engaged in a battle with Ryan Fitzpatrick to potentially be the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. If Rosen can't beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick this year, then it seems very clear to me that the Dolphins are going to be drafting somebody at the very top of the season, right? Top of the draft next year. And so what in the world then would happen with Josh Rosen? Is he going to be a backup again to another highly rated first-round quarterback? Is he already going to be on his third team in 3 years? Does he have any value in being able to trade him? This is, and I hate to say it for year two for a quarterback, but if Josh Rosen can't beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick and get on the field and give the Miami Dolphins reasons to believe maybe we don't need to draft a quarterback at the top of the draft, maybe Josh Rosen could be our guy for the future, then he's in trouble. Because it's likely then he'll be moved on to his third team in 3 years. And as much as I want Josh Rosen to be successful, because I think he's a smart, engaging, talented guy who I loved watching at UCLA, he has a ton on the line right now with the Dolphins. Fitzpatrick doesn't, right? Fitzpatrick is going to come out. He's going to gunsling. He's going to whip the ball around. You know what you're going to get from him. At times, scintillating play. He was awesome. Extraordinary with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at times. But he doesn't have that many years left in his career. So even if Fitzmagic comes out and brings the Fitzmagic, it isn't necessarily going to change anything about the long-range trajectory of his career. The four quarterbacks that I just named you, Dak Prescott, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, and Josh Rosen, are the four that I think we're going to learn the most about this year. I'd put a little bit of a star beside Lamar Jackson, because I do think Lamar Jackson, it's going to be intriguing to see how much more of a passer he can be in year two. A lot of times, year two is where quarterbacks get exposed. So while there's a lot of reason for optimism with Baker Mayfield and with Sam Darnold, a lot of times guys who have good early success in year one, that's when the NFL defenses go back to the laboratory, they watch film all offseason, they find the two or three things that you didn't do well in year one as a rookie, and that's all they ask you to do in year two. And sometimes there's huge growing pains going forward. I think we already started to see a little bit of that with Lamar Jackson, with the way the LA Chargers put together that defensive game plan that totally flummoxed Lamar Jackson. He didn't know what to do, right? They played a lot more guys in the secondary. They totally baffled him. Young quarterback, hadn't seen a defense like that. Lamar Jackson, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen, and certainly Josh Allen, all those guys are going to have a lot thrown at them. But I actually think that Josh Rosen has got the most at stake, because unlike the other guys who at least have a team invested in them, Josh Rosen doesn't have very much invested for the Miami Dolphins. He needs to prove that he's worthy of that investment. So those are the four quarterbacks that I'm intrigued by. Running back. Look, what in the world do you do if you're the LA Chargers with Melvin Gordon, or if you're the Dallas Cowboys with Ezekiel Elliott? I don't think you can give Ezekiel Elliott big money. Let me just say it right out the front. First of all, you're trying to decide what to do with Dak. You're going to have to pay him a lot. You're trying what to decide to do with Amari Cooper. You're going to have to pay him a lot. And I think of those three guys, Dak is the most important. Amari Cooper is the second most important. And Ezekiel Elliott is the least important. Doesn't mean Ezekiel Elliott's not important. Just means that at the running back position, I believe if Dak is good and Amari Cooper's good, I can find a lot of guys to do what Ezekiel Elliott does for me. Running backs don't last very long, and they don't make much of a difference in the long-range trajectory of your team. Look at what happened with Le'Veon Bell. He's gone. James Conner steps in. The reason why the Pittsburgh Steelers did not win was because their defense wasn't good enough, by and large, not because their offense fell apart. Look at what happened in L.A., not with the Chargers, but with the Rams. Todd Gurley gets massive, huge, revolutionary money for a running back. Now he's got arthritis in the knee, reportedly. Wasn't able to play very much, at least at full strength, it didn't seem like, down the stretch for the Rams, even on their Super Bowl run. And now they bring in C.J. Anderson, and C.J. Anderson arguably is the more impactful back in the playoffs. You pay C.J. Anderson virtually nothing. You pay James Conner virtually nothing. Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley are making a ton. The running back position continues to get devalued every year. I don't think you can give Ezekiel Elliott big money. Now, I'm not of the opinion that's because Ezekiel Elliott is too much of a risk off the field. Some people make that argument. I'm not one of them. I think he got unfairly treated in the 6-game suspension. I think the shoving incident. I think he's just been a young guy who has made sometimes some knuckleheaded decisions. And unlike in years past when he made knuckleheaded decisions, now everything Ezekiel Elliott does is on video. He's at a Mardi Gras parade. He shows a girl's, flashes a girl's boob. It's a big story. He's at a Las Vegas party and he bumps into a security guard. There's video of it. It's a big story. I don't think that Ezekiel Elliott is a bad guy, but I'm just not convinced you can give big money to a running back right now. I think that is a major issue that needs to be resolved going forward. And if I'm Jerry Jones and I'm sitting around looking at my big trio and I'm thinking, man, Amari Cooper, I may have made the best trade of my life to get Amari Cooper in here. Maybe some truth to it for Jerry Jones. But what in the world do you do with Ezekiel Elliott, especially if he's going to have a long-range holdout? You remember, for old heads out there, it doesn't seem that old that long ago, Emmitt Smith did this. Remember Derek Lassick came in for the Dallas Cowboys? Cowboys fell apart as Emmitt Smith was demanding big-time pay increase, set out the first few games of a season, came back, was great. Cowboys paid him what he thought he was worth. I don't think that Ezekiel Elliott has as much control as he believes he does. I think that it's likely if you break this down that Ezekiel Elliott isn't worth the money. Now, Melvin Gordon, he makes a big difference, I think, for Phillip Rivers. But if you look at his backup, I said Melvin Ingram, it's Melvin Gordon, of course. What are the odds that there'd be two star players on a team named Melvin? Melvin Gordon at running back, what in the world do you do with Melvin Gordon at running back? I think you look at some of the young guys behind him and their production when Gordon was out, and you say, you know what? Phillip Rivers is an aging quarterback. Maybe we can get him for another year or two with Melvin Gordon, but the truth of the matter is he's not worth big money, especially not with an aging quarterback when there's other talent you need to be able to fill in. I wouldn't buckle to Melvin Gordon. I wouldn't buckle to Ezekiel Elliott either, but if I had to choose between the two, I'd be more inclined to give money to Gordon than I would to Ezekiel Elliott, because at least if you're giving money to Gordon, you've got a couple of years left with Phillip Rivers, and you're not necessarily sabotaging years ahead for the franchise, and you don't necessarily have to balance out the cost in the same way that the Dallas Cowboys do. Those are the big storylines that I am following, the six players that I'm most intrigued to see how they do as you begin this season. Will be intriguing to see for sure.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It's a confidence show. We bring in Jeff Schwartz, NFL training camps, everybody officially reporting today. How excited are you for the NFL season to finally be back, Jeff Schwartz?
Last night, I saw a winners and losers article from day one of the Browns camp. Like, I am ready to go. What's better than that? They're not even in pads. It's so awesome. I just got back from Pac-12 Media. Well, I'm still out in Los Angeles, but I was at Pac-12 Media Day a couple days ago, and football is happening fast. College football, August 24th is the first day. Arizona, Hawaii, I think, two of the games.
Yeah, Florida, Miami is the big game down in Orlando that will be pretty awesome, I think.
We can bet on football next weekend.
Yeah, and there'll be football every starting next week. every week all the way until April 26th, I think, which is when the XFL is going to end. And certainly if you're not interested in the XFL, you can pay attention to it all the way up through the Super Bowl, which will be in Miami early in February. All right, so let's start to break down some of these big decisions that have to be made across the NFL. If you right now had to buy stock in Marcus Mariota, well, before we get to Marcus Mariota versus Jameis Winston, I want to say this. Taylor Lewan failing a PED test. He's out for the first four games. He is the left tackle, second highest paid offensive lineman, I believe, in the NFL. How impactful is his loss? Would that make you look askance, perhaps, at the Titans' first four games? Three of them are on the road. I believe the first four are on the road against the Browns. It'd be fascinating to see how the Browns do coming out of the gate. They then play against the Colts. They've never beaten Andrew Luck. They then, I believe, go on the road against Jacksonville and then on the road against Atlanta. There's a pretty good chance the Titans would be underdogs maybe in all four of those games and have a decent chance, I think, of starting off 0-4 even with Lewan. How much of an impact do you think losing the left tackle is for the first four games?
I mean, anytime you lose a left tackle, it's going to be big, but now you lose a left tackle on a team with a new offense, with a quarterback that needs to stay healthy, with a quarterback in a big year. It's going to be rough because what do you do in camp? Like, you have to let Lewan practice because he needs to get ready for the season, but you also need to let your backup left tackle practice as well. So now he loses reps. Now he probably won't be ready as ready as he could be to play in week five. It's a big loss, and you know these are unfortunate because if you take a supplement, and not all supplements are like certified by whatever, and like sometimes they're made at factories where they can mix things. And I think Lewan like knowingly took something, probably not, but it's a bad situation. It sucks for the Titans.
So what do you think actually happened? Did you take supplements while you were playing on the offensive line? Did you take anything that was not given to you by a team, physician or doctor or trainer staff?
Yeah, I took stuff that wasn't given to me, but I really wasn't a big pre-workout guy, and I really wasn't a guy that took a bunch of supplements. So basically what happens is you have a manufacturer that makes a product that would be illegal in sports, and then they basically make the same product that's legal for sports in the same factory, even on the same floor, even in the same setting, like that, so they can cross-contaminate sometimes, and there's ingredients that aren't listed on labels, and it's a pretty shady business. Even stuff that's certified sometimes is not really above board. So it's a tough situation. I don't really think he's using PEDs, and he said what he tested positive for, which is something that often guys get busted for when this happens.
Do you think that there's actually that much benefit to supplements like this? I mean, how much of a obviously some things are allowed which can change drastically your ability to play. For instance, Toradol. You can get a Toradol shot which would allow you to play when otherwise you would have no chance to play, right? A pain-killing injection.
It's not like that crazy. Like, I've had them my whole career. It just numbs the pain a little bit. Like, if you're injured, you're injured. Toradol just helps numb, and that's why the NFL is kind of moving away from it, because obviously with the head injuries, you can, guys get injections right into like an injured body part. That's a little more severe than Toradol. I think that the pre-workout stuff is great. I mean, it gets you going for a workout. So like, if you're having a rough day, kind of getting up, the pre-workout just helps you do better, honestly, in a workout. After workout, you need the protein. Guys got to put on weight, so protein shakes is a good way to get calories that you need to have, because you need to eat a lot of calories to put on weight. We are burning lots of calories. If you want to put on weight and you're a player, you're an offensive lineman, for example, you want to put on weight, you got to eat like 6,000, 8,000 calories a day to put on weight for as much as you're running and working out. So that's a good way to do it. So a lot of guys do use a lot of supplements, and I don't fault them for doing it, but then you run a situation where this happens.
We're talking to Jeff Schwartz, a former offensive lineman, played for many different NFL teams, with the NFL officially returning training camps, everybody underway. All right. How much of an impact do you think for the Titans losing Taylor Lewan has for Marcus Mariota, given that this is Mariota's defining contract year? We just ran through the difficult schedule that they face. How much, if any, does the game plan change when your starting left tackle is out?
Change, I would say. I mean, you hope that the young guy can come in, but this is a kind of make or break year for Marcus. The NFL tiers, if you saw that article out, it was Mike Sando of The Athletic, they have 27th in the NFL. And this is coming from evaluators within the league. I thought that was kind of shockingly low. I would maybe have him a little bit higher, but when you look at his career and how much he gets hurt, and he really hasn't been a guy with a lot of yardage when he completes passes. And he completes the ball at a high level, I'll give him that. But is he going to take that next step and really, in second year under Vrabel, take that next step? Because if he doesn't, the Titans might be the Mark Miller quarterback. I don't know what you do if he's just average. You just sign him to a long-term contract and hold your nose and hope he improves, or do you try to get yourself Justin Herbert?
Who would you buy stock in right now? Because there's three different guys that I think there's still a verdict to be had on them. Dak Prescott, Marcus Mariota, and certainly Jameis Winston. Would you buy stock in any of those three right now?
Well, I would buy my stock in Dak Prescott because he has the best team around him right now. And they need him to be a little bit more aggressive, which hopefully Kellen Moore, the new OC, can bring out in him. But he has Cooper, and if you look at his numbers last year when Cooper was there and when he wasn't, when he was there, he was better on third down. He had more yards per catch. He had more yards per attempt. I mean, the offense was rolling a lot better. He has Witt now and Cobb, and Frederick the center's back, and he's got a good defense, 9th last year in DVOA. So I'd buy stock in him just because I'd buy stock in kind of the Cowboys. I didn't actually, they're a dark horse to win the NFC this year. You go to Tampa Bay, Winston is with Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians is going to get Winston to play well, or Winston will never play in the NFL again. I mean, he won't ever start again if BA cannot get the most out of him. We've seen that Bruce Arians gets the most out of almost any quarterback he's with, maybe every quarterback he's ever played with. And so Jameis Winston's going to have a good year, I think, cut down on turnovers. Now, they're not very good, in my opinion, as a team, so they might not win a lot. But I think Winston's going to do well. Mariota might be the odd man out. He doesn't have an offensive coach like a Bruce Arians. He doesn't have the weapons, solidified weapons, I'd say. Titans have some weapons, but not solidified like the Cowboys do. They don't have the defense like they do. And so Mariota might be the odd guy out in the situation, especially with his health. He didn't stay healthy. Winston and Dak Prescott are healthy all the time.
All right, let's go to running backs. Obviously, Ezekiel Elliott, Melvin Gordon, kind of recreating some of the drama that we have seen from Le'Veon Bell before, without the franchise tag at least applied so far. What would you do if you were the Cowboys and you're the Chargers with both of these guys?
Oh, man, I love running backs. I mean, I played Adrian Peterson, Jamal Charles, so many great running backs, but you can't pay them, dude. I mean, it shows now with analytics, and I think that there is there's some good analytics, some bad, just like with anything else, but they all show that running back value to team building just isn't there. And I do think that Zeke Elliott is the running back that does the most for his offense in the National Football League. The numbers show that as well. This is what he does in the screen game and how he affects defenses and play action. Dak is so much better when Zeke is on the field for play action. But again, you have to pay Dak ahead of the running back. You have to pay Amari Cooper ahead of Zeke Elliott. It shows the day that when Cooper's in the game, Dak is much better. You have to save money to pay Byron Jones. You have to pay Jalen Smith eventually. You have to pay Van Der Esch down the road, right? You cannot commit all this money to a running back when you know you have to commit money down the road. If Zeke wants to take less money than he probably thinks he deserves, then sure, pay him. Same with Gordon. Yeah, if you want to, you have Phillip Rivers. You have a left tackle who's injured at the moment, not practicing on all things, but you have your weapons on defense, your pass rushers, you have wide receivers. Sure, if Gordon wants to take less than he thinks he can get or deserves, yeah, sign him, but not the max, call it max contract level that these guys want. Austin Eckler, the Chargers' backup, averages like 5.5 yards a carry last year. So I don't think you can pay any of these guys, and I hope everyone gets paid, but it does not make sense if you're building a team to pay a running back. You can draft them later in the draft, draft someone next year, and you get the same production.
We're talking to Jeff Shorts. What do you think in general about the Adrian Peterson story? Like you said, you played with Adrian Peterson. Yeah. He made over $100 million in the past 12 years, and reports are that he may have virtually nothing left. How common do you think that is? Is that something that people talked about in the locker room, or are you as stunned as everybody else when you see a story like that?
I saw you today on Twitter, or yesterday on Twitter as well, argue with the people about the after taxes stuff. And,
yeah.
And your point, though, stands, though, right? I mean, let's just say he got a $50 million after taxes, whatever that number is. I mean, you have to expend an extraordinary amount of money, and then you also have to invest a lot of it with one bad person. Look, if it was Bernie Madoff, yeah, sure, but I don't think that's the case here, right? I was told that, and I don't know if this report is true, but I think his financial advisor took the money and gave it to a political campaign as well. Like, it wasn't like he's getting ripped off in a Ponzi scheme. And you know, this is good. You know, players, look, I'm not, I've grown to become more financially literate, and I think it's important to know where your money is and kind of look at it and make sure it's still there. And every month, just kind of take a peek ski. Like, I don't really know if I'm up or down sometimes. I just know it's still there at least. And that's not, you know, be all end all. If it's a, like I said, Ponzi scheme, you're not really going to know. But he must have been spending, I saw his 30th birthday, and he rode in on a camel. Like, dude, he spent a lot of money. It's not all on the financial advisor if you're losing $50 million in a time span, plus endorsements, whatever else. So just another story of an athlete going broke, man. It's sad. He made a lot of money, and I wish he was able to enjoy, you know, when he retires, all the money that he should be having.
So what kind of help financially with advisement did you get as a player? Because there's a lot of discussion about that, like, yeah, how involved is the NFL in helping to ensure that, like you said, I mean, it's not uncommon that 21 or 22-year-old guys know nothing about finances, right? When you come into the league, right, you may not have ever had a job before. You certainly have never had a job that pays you that kind of money. You might never have seen $1,000 in cash before, right? And then suddenly you're in the NFL and you've got money hand over fist being direct deposited into your bank account every couple of weeks. What kind of advice did you get? Did they have policies in place? Did the NFLPA help you out? I'm just kind of curious what options you had if you are, like a lot of 21 and 22-year-old guys are relatively unsophisticated with your money and suddenly you end up with a lot of it.
Yeah, you know, the PA, of course, they have seminars with all of us about money management, things like that. And I do think that if you went to them and said, hey, can you vet my financial guy, they would do it for you. They're not going to, you know, send you in a direction of a financial guy. Not everyone needs it. Like, I didn't need a financial advisor till my third year in the NFL. And that was basically, I just called someone and was like, hey, you know, like, do I have enough money to buy a house? I mean, that's basically what I did. I didn't have enough money to really invest heavily. And a lot of guys are in the same situation as me. And you just have to find someone you hope you trust. I went to someone that eventually that has a lot of players, and the players recommended him, and they said he was good, and he's a reputable firm. But the PA doesn't really tell you where to put your money, nor should they, in my opinion. But their service is available for background checks for really anyone who's an employee of yours, for financial advisors. But you have to take it upon yourself as an athlete to just do research yourself. Like I said, not everyone I didn't understand it, and I'm a smart guy. I still don't really understand it sometimes. It's hard to understand finances, especially when you think you're going to make money forever, which you do when you're young in the NFL especially. So a lot of guys just have to do it on your own. You really need to try to study as much as possible, make sure the guys you hire aren't going to steal your money. And lastly, this is the hard part, I get it, is family members, no bueno, right? Don't have to handle your money. And family friends, I wouldn't do it. It never seems to work out. So those, you stay away from those, and you'll be fine, I think.
Last question, would you buy stock right now in the Cleveland Browns?
No. I think that they're going to go 9-7 or 8-8. There's too much talking coming from them. They haven't won anything yet, and they're talking like they have. And I get it. You want to win the Super Bowl. I'm okay with them saying that, those goals. But, you know, when is the last time a quarterback that talks this much kind of backed it up? Not really, right? The best quarterbacks in the NFL are just quiet. They just go about their business. They're not worried about who says what in the media. And, yeah, I get it. Baker Mayfield is different, but you don't hear from Sam Darnold. You don't hear from Josh Allen. You don't hear from Josh Rosen. You don't hear from Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins. You don't hear from any of these guys. Just Baker Mayfield, the one guy talking. And I think they're very talented. And the one thing that I just don't get why we've glossed this over is Freddie Kitchens. All right, Freddie Kitchens last year did great as the OC. I get it. That was the OC on a sinking ship. He could take as many chances as he wanted. He could do whatever he wanted. There was no pressure whatsoever to win football games last year. It was great they did. They also played 5 non-playoff teams and beat them down the stretch. They lost the 2 best teams they played, and they got beat up in Houston. Their pass defense schedule this year, go to Warren Sharp. I like Warren Sharp. His stuff is good. They were the 26th easiest pass defenses they faced last year. This year, they go to 5. Biggest jump in the NFL. They play great pass defenses this year. I just don't see it, man. Like, give me a year for me to see how Kitchens is as a coach, Give me a year to see how it all works with Odell and Jarvis and Baker. You know, I think the Titans go into week one and win that game in week one. So what happens then? Like, do they combust? What happens if they go 1-3 to start the year? What happens then? So I just think it's just too many moving parts right now.
Outstanding stuff as always. He's Jeff Schwartz. He's guest hosted. He comes on weekly.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Lots of running back drama as we come into the start of training camps. And one of the most ridiculous running back dramas that's out there is Adrian Peterson and the fact that he may have blown over $100 million. You talk about Melvin Gordon. You talk about Ezekiel Elliott. What exactly is going to go on with all three of these guys? The Adrian Peterson story just continues to boggle my mind. Like, the more I think about it, the more insane it becomes. This guy made over $100 million in 12 years, and he somehow doesn't have evidently any of that money left because he's borrowing millions of dollars to try to pay off and live on some of the loans that he's got out there. I mean, this is crazy because he made $100 million over 12 years playing football, but he probably made another 20 or 30 or maybe even 40 million on endorsement-related income, which isn't even that high relative to his overall football income. And he has almost nothing left. I mean, this is one of the craziest stories I have ever seen, even in this era of athletes making really bad decisions. And then you tie that in with, okay, he's trying to battle out now, and we'll see whether he can have another year as the starting running back for the Washington Redskins, or whether there's going to be a battle that's won there by Darius Geis, who was the star running back from LSU, who is coming off of a significant injury that he had, I think a torn ACL, as a rookie. So you would think that Darius Geis would maybe be the favorite there, but Adrian Peterson had a whale of a season last year. And then you've got the drama from Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott about exactly what's going to go down there. How long might those guys be willing to sit out? Will they show up? Won't they show up? All the different stories that surround both of these guys. Let me bring in Jason Martin, who's hanging out with me today on the show. J-Mart, how would you handle? Let's start with Ezekiel Elliott, because I think that's a debate that a lot of fans are having. Certainly Cowboy fans, but because they are truly America's team and there are more Cowboy fans than there are anybody else, what do you do with Ezekiel Elliott, particularly because, as we said in the open to the show, if you look at what happened with Le'Veon Bell not playing, James Conner steps in and appears to be at least a partial approximation of Le'Veon Bell. Certainly for $500,000 that you pay James Conner, he wasn't 1/28th of the player that Le'Veon Bell would have been, considering Le'Veon Bell was going to count $14 million. You've got all the drama out in L.A. right now with the Rams and Todd Gurley and his health, given how much money they've guaranteed to him. And then you have a player who they go out and basically find on the waiver wire and bring him in, and he's every bit as good. How do you handle this? What would you do? What is Ezekiel Elliott's value? How long could this go on? How devastating could it be for the Cowboys in terms of their overall chemistry? Could he pull an Emmitt Smith back in the 90s and sit out and try to demonstrate how valuable he is? How much could that hurt Dak? I mean, there are a lot of storylines in particular surrounding this Ezekiel Elliott decision. What would you do?
Ezekiel is somebody that you want to think is worth paying, but it's a position that I no longer think is worth paying. The average NFL career is 3.3 years. The average running back career is 2.35 the last
time. Yeah, that's
time
wild.
That's insane. And then I looked at Yahoo last night. Charles Robinson reported that the extension Elliott wants is more than Todd Gurley's 4-year $57.5 million deal. And what that means is Dallas could eventually, including Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott, have three players among the top three salaries at their position. So if you look at those three guys and you say, all right, who do you pay and in what order? I think that can become an interesting deal. I just don't know. The running back position, this ain't 1999, and it's certainly not 1989. It's 2019, where it's built to throw the football, where it's all about the quarterback. So I can see paying Dak Prescott. And I can see making sure he has targets to throw the football to, like Amari Cooper. But I've just seen way too many dudes that weren't taken high in the draft at the running back spot that have turned out to be superstar-level players. The guy that I always think gets lost in the shuffle is Alvin Kamara, who I look at and I think is one of the most talented players in the league and somebody that I would certainly want to try to pay for. But what would it necessarily be worth? Look at another guy who disappeared last year because he was suspended and then cut by the Chiefs in Kareem Hunt. The Chiefs still found backs. They had two or three guys come out, Williams and a couple of other dudes, that all were pretty successful after Kareem Hunt left. We saw C.J. Anderson with the Rams. Yeah. Now, I think Zeke is the only one that makes me at least shudder because I know how important he is. And if I'm Jason Garrett, I'm frightened to death right now that he's actually going to hold out and miss some games because Ezekiel Elliott does make me look a lot smarter because of how versatile he is on the field and how many more points we tend to score when he's out there.
Yeah, and look, I agree with everything you said. I just think at the running back position now, you can't get that much money invested in it, particularly because look at what's going to happen with the Rams. I mean, they may have a ton of dead money with Todd Gurley if it's true that he truly has an arthritic knee and if he's not going to be able to be used as much as he has been in past years. And think about how much of an impact C.J. Anderson had. I mean, you can find a running back who will fit your system and be decent, right? And my argument would be that the difference between the second or third best running back in the NFL and the 16th and the 23rd best running backs in the NFL isn't very substantial. And maybe it's not much of a difference between the 23rd best running back, the second or third best running back, and the 33rd best running back, right? And so I think that's where you can start to save some money. And if you look at the Cowboys in particular, Amari Cooper is going to want big money. And they've already given a lot up to get Amari Cooper. So it would stun me if the Cowboys, based on his production last year, aren't prepared to give Amari Cooper a big salary. It would also stun me if they don't end up deciding to give Dak Prescott big money as well. And Dak arguably has earned it even more than most because of where he was drafted. It's not like he has made very much money in the first 4 years under his contract that exists right now, right? So he is owed a lot, not just for his future year contracts, but based on how underpaid the Cowboys have been able to live with him in their as their starting quarterback under that fourth round quarterback salary. Now, also, Ezekiel Elliott thinks he deserves his fair share. And I just think of those big three, it's clear that Ezekiel Elliott is the least important player. And I think what's going to start to happen, and I'm curious if this has already begun at low levels, is athletic kids aren't going to want to play running back anymore. You know, we had Eddie George on this show a couple of years ago, and he said something I thought was really interesting. He said if he were a 16, 17, or 18-year-old kid right now, he thinks he would switch to tight end. And then when he said that, I was like, wow. I mean, we're talking about a Heisman Trophy winning running back, a borderline NFL Hall of Famer, who I think if you look at the influence that he had in his era, as the number of rushing yards continue to decline, I'm not sure he ever gets in. But boy, oh boy, he was awfully close, right, at that level of being a borderline Hall of Fame caliber player. And if guys like him are taking a step back and saying, wait a minute, why wouldn't I play tight end? I'm big, I'm strong, I'm fast, I can get down the field, I'll get hit less, I'll have a longer career, I'll arguably make a lot more money as a tight end than I would as a running back. We saw it a little bit with Jalen Hurd, right? And I'm curious how he's going to do with the new job. He switched to wide receiver from running back.
It worked out pretty well for him at Baylor.
Yeah, I think he. What did he end up going? Third or fourth round as a wide receiver.
He's 49ers.
One of those. Yeah, he's one of those storylines as Jimmy Garoppolo tries to make his way back. We'll see exactly how he's able to play. But the last laugh could be from him. I mean, he would have been drafted and been able to play running back in the NFL. But maybe in the long range, the move to wide receiver. Not a lot of guys can do it. But he thought he could, and maybe he's going to end up being correct, and we'll see how he does now in the NFL. It's a credit to him how talented he is, but I think you're starting to see that happen. Maybe smaller size running backs are thinking, hey, maybe I should just play corner, right? Or maybe I can be like a slot receiver instead of being a typical running back, which is wild. As you said, it ain't 1989 anymore. When we were growing up, I mean, the running back position epitomized by Emmitt Smith was the glamour position in the NFL. And now the quarterback has just continued to become more and more and more integral to the overall offensive flow. And in the process, the running back has essentially stopped to matter, right?
Yeah. I mean, also, you have to pay Amari Cooper because you gave up a first-round draft pick to get him. Like, you can't give up a first-round draft pick for a rental. This ain't Kawhi Leonard. Like, when you brought him in, with the full intention, unless he was just garbage, which he is not, of keeping him long-term. So you're going to have to pay him, and he's going to ask for a lot of money, and deservedly so, based on what we saw production-wise down the stretch. And Dak being a quarterback means he has to be up top. I really think Zeke Elliott is a terrific football player. The odds are just not in his favor. Like, it's just not something that you can... How many smart football teams right now are paying running backs? Not a lot, right? Like, most of the ones winning Super Bowls generally do not have household names at running back.
I think the Rams would be the exception
Rams
there.
Rams are the exception.
The Rams were able to do that because they had Jared Goff still under a rookie contract.
Exactly. You have to have exactly the right situation to be able to pay a running back and it not cost you. And when you got to the games where you needed him most, he barely could play because he's got arthritic knees.
And because, I mean, this is what happens with running backs. Like, that stat you hit on how long running backs last in the NFL. I mean, they are the most beaten down players, I think, in the entire league.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, when you consider who's hitting them every single play, when you consider the amount of work that's put on them, there's almost no running backs. I mean, Adrian Peterson, to his credit, you know, we talked about the fact that he's lost over $100 million potentially. But he's a physical freak, right? I mean, he's been able to go into the line of scrimmage and take those hits year after year and play plus 30 over the age of 30 in a way that most don't. But it's still pretty incredible to think about how quickly they age and how quickly these running backs. And I mean, look, to his credit, Ezekiel Elliott recognized this. I mean, that's one of the reasons he wanted to get out of Ohio State, get into the league as quickly as he could, because you really only get two contracts at the running back position. You get your rookie contract, which is why it's important to see where you get drafted, and then you get that first payday right after your rookie contract. And that's what Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott are after, and I don't blame them
they're trying to maximize their revenue now, like early in these deals, because they know their longevity. They realize that right now they better strike while the iron's hot, because the chances are not good that in 2 years or in 1 year – that money's going to be worth it to their team based on their production because of the injury risks and the longevity of careers.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, this is what Maurice Clarett saw years ago when he tried to sue to get into the NFL. I mean, I think being a 19 or 20 or 21-year-old running back, he was like, why would I take those hits in college and just diminish my overall earnings potential eventually once I get to the NFL? Now, you know, he had all sorts of issues off the field and never really panned out in an NFL direction. Doesn't mean that he wasn't correct in his assessment of every single hit he takes in college, theoretically, could diminish his overall earnings ability in the NFL. And there's no better example of that than Marcus Lattimore, who tore up both of his knees while playing for South Carolina and was never able to play in the NFL at all. So I think you start to break that down, and it is really difficult to even contemplate why you would take any of those hits. And I don't blame Ezekiel Elliott or Melvin Gordon for wanting the big money contracts. I just don't think there's any way remotely possible that you can give it to them.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
We are joined now by Blake Ferguson. He is the long snapper for the LSU Tigers, getting ready for another college football season down on the Bayou. And before we get to the art form of long snapping and all the other details there, I got to ask you, what's your verdict on the new locker rooms, which are going viral as we speak on social media? Everybody talking about the fact that you guys can recline your chairs and take naps and everything else. Have you gotten to check them out yet?
Man, they are unreal. I mean, they told us that they were going to be awesome lockers, and they completely blew our minds. I mean, it has been unreal to see what they've done with that locker room and the way that it's kind of changing how people view that kind of locker room setting for a football team.
Some people say it's crazy to have an ability to give a player a chance to take a nap. Do you ever want to take naps in the locker room?
Absolutely. You know, when we're in camp and you know, we're there from 6 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, and we have maybe 30, 45 minutes here or there. It's good to have that at our, you know, disposal to be able to go in there and do that and have a place to lay down for a little while, get a little bit of shut-eye, and not have to go all the way back to your apartment and then come all the way back to the facility. You have it all there in one place.
So you really think you'll be able to fall asleep even amid all the chaos? Like, that's something you're looking forward to?
You know, it's remains to be seen, I guess, because, you know, I have not tested it out yet. I've not taken it for a test drive. But,
yeah.
You know, I think in fall camp, when you're so tired that you just you'll fall asleep anywhere. I mean, I've fallen asleep on the floor of the locker room before, so I'm sure that I can fall asleep on the recliners that we have.
We're talking to Blake Ferguson. You can follow him, by the way, on Twitter, at BFerguson50. He is a long snapper for LSU. So this is going to be, I believe, your fifth year with LSU, right?
That is correct. Looking forward to it.
Has it passed fast to you? Because, you know, sometimes when you're young and in college, every year seems like it takes forever. So when you look back now, does it seem like the first 4 years have gone by really fast, slow? How would you assess it as you get ready for year five?
It's absolutely flown by. You know, people tell you all the time, this experience, you got to soak it in now because it truly goes by so fast. And you don't believe them until you turn around and it's your senior season and you're looking back and you're like, man, where did all the time go? Where all the experiences go? It's crazy how fast it goes.
You started with Les Miles. You're now with Coach O. How are they different? How are they similar? What's the vibe like compared to the two guys?
It's, you know, I get that question all the time. What's the difference between the two? And I'd say that they're both, you know, you hear the term players coach all the time. And they truly are both players coaches. I think Coach Miles's approach was more of a laid back kind of, you know, just conversational approach, to the way that he coached. And then, you know, Coach O is very motivational in the way that he approaches his coaching style. He gets fired up. Everybody knows how juiced up he can get on game days. And he's like that every day when he walks into the team meeting room for our first team meeting of the day. He is amped and ready to go. So, but, you know, I thank the Lord for, you know, both of the experiences that I've had with both coaches. Because I've learned a lot from both of them, so you know I wouldn't change it for the world.
For people who have never been to Tiger Stadium and have never had the opportunity to be there in your home field at Death Valley for a big game, how would you describe what it feels like to run out at night for a huge LSU home game?
I guess the only thing that I can equate it to, like, sound-wise, would be like a 4th of July fireworks show. Like, it is just like the grand finale of a fireworks show. It is just going, and it is so rocking and so loud that you just can't even hear yourself think. Your body is just shaking, and you have almost no idea where you are. It is unreal when you run out there, and the band is playing on either side of you, and the fans are just going nuts. It's amazing.
So you have a job that's really interesting, long snapper, and I've met you a couple of times down in Destin because you're very active in being a student athlete and helping to kind of set the tone and rules and regulations for being an SEC student athlete. And again, we're talking to Blake Ferguson. He's at BFerguson50 on Twitter. You don't really have an advantage at all to getting super hyped up, because what you have to do is an incredible control of the ball, right? So how do you control your adrenaline when you're talking about it's like every fireworks thing is going off at the same time, unlike, say, a linebacker, an offensive defensive lineman who get to hit somebody, or even a quarterback who drops back to pass and, you know, can kind of deal with the crowd around them, running back, every other position? It's like you get hit and you calm down. How do you keep your sort of emotions in check? Because what you do is highly technical, and if you get too hyped, the ball goes sailing over somebody's head, and you make a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very difficult job, you know, being in that kind of environment and having to stay cool, calm, and collected the whole time. You know, my pregame playlist consists of a lot of like smooth John Mayer type music, and
everybody else is listening to rap and hard rock and getting hyped exactly. up, and you're just sitting there like listening to John Mayer love songs.
A little bit of Frank Sinatra here and there, you know, just something to just kind of keep me calm. And you know, when we go out there, it's kind of that sniper mentality because we have one shot to do what we do and do it perfectly. Everybody else has multiple plays to do what they do and do it well. We have one play. So you kind of have to keep that mentality when you go out there, that you have one shot to get it right and you got to make it count.
So I think people listening to us right now are probably fascinated by it because you don't really pay a lot of attention to the long snapper unless something goes wrong, right? I mean, that's when people notice you, and you never want to get noticed on the field for anything going wrong. But how do you realize that you're good at long snapping? I know your brother is in the NFL, I believe, with the Buffalo Bills, and he's obviously been very successful. But at what point, like, what makes somebody a good long snapper? When do you recognize that you have the ability to do it well?
Yeah, well, I mean, long snappers kind of come in all shapes and sizes. There's not one specific build for a long snapper. So, you know, when you can go out, I mean, we go to camps, snapping camps throughout high school and college. And at these camps, you can kind of showcase your talents and compete against the best long snappers in the country. And, you know, you see guys like, take John Weeks, for example. He's in the snapper in Houston for the Texans, and he's, I think, 5'9 or 5'10, and he's been playing. I think he's going into his 10th season in Houston.
Wow.
And then you see guys like Don Mulbach in Detroit. He's 6'4, 6'5, almost 280. And you know, you see this broad range of guys that can do this, but what sets the best of the best apart is, you know, obviously being able to snap and be consistent with where you're putting the ball every time. Speed, you know, being able to, once you snap the ball, get down in coverage and a little bit of athleticism to be able to make a tackle when you get down there and be good in coverage because, you know, once you snap and you start running downfield, you become a linebacker at that point. You're on the hunt and you're going down to get that returner.
How many tackles have you made?
I've made two in my college career. I had one 2 years ago against Alabama and then one last year at Florida. So that's two pretty cool moments in my career because those are two teams that I enjoy playing against, and it's cool to have those two games as my two tackles.
Have you got those tackles on, like, YouTube or somewhere where you could access them? Like, if I were sitting next to you right now, could you pull it up on your phone and show me the tackles?
The Florida game, I can. The Alabama game, no.
Is it a good tackle in the Florida game? Is that why you have that one?
Well, no. So I actually had to create a highlight tape.
Oh, yeah.
Because this year I'm hoping to be up for the first ever Patrick Manley Award, which if you know who Patrick Manley is, he snapped for the Bears for a long time. And this year they're doing the first ever Patrick Manley Snapper of the Year Award for college football. And so in order to be considered for that award, we had to kind of put together a highlight tape of this past season. And so that was one of the ones that I put on there.
So as you get ready for your fifth season at LSU, you hope to go on to the NFL and be a long snapper as well. What is the process like for a long snapper? Can you get invited to the combine? Do you go for all these workouts? Like, when your season ends with LSU this year and you try to pivot and turn towards the NFL, what will that process be like for you?
Yeah, it's kind of a different approach than most guys that are trying to go and make it in the NFL because you don't see a lot of snappers drafted very often. So my kind of process will be very similar to what my brother did because he's obviously had a lot of success. And so I'll go home after we play our bowl game. Hopefully we're playing in the national championship. And I'll go home back to Atlanta and start training there. And then I'll just wait. Hopefully I get into the Senior Bowl. That tends to open a lot of doors for guys. And then typically the best snapper at the Senior Bowl gets invited to the combine. I think typically they only invite one snapper to the combine, and so hopefully I'll have that opportunity as well. But if I don't, I'll have opportunities to snap in front of NFL coaches at my pro day down in Baton Rouge, and then I can also do individual workouts with different teams if they want to come to Baton Rouge and work me out.
All right,
my older brother did.
I want to circle back around, and we're talking, and this is pretty fascinating to me because you've told me some of these stories before, and I was like, I need to explore this more. Blake Ferguson, he is the long snapper for LSU, hopes to play in the NFL, but right now coming back for his fifth year to LSU. They have the fabulous locker rooms that have just gone viral on social media this week. So when did you recognize that you were good? Like, if somebody's out there listening to us right now, and they're like, you know, a high school kid or their middle school kid, and they love football, but maybe they're thinking, hey, I don't know that I've got the speed to be a linebacker, not sure that I can, you know, have the arm strength to be a quarterback. What would you say to someone is an attribute that would give them the sense, hey, maybe you would be good at long snapping?
Yeah. You know, I was always kind of that in between where, you know, I wasn't big enough to play O-line. I was kind of too short to play tight end. When my brother became successful at snapping and then I began to try it, and I was like, well, I can snap the ball pretty well. I can get downfield. And, you know, the biggest thing about snapping and doing it well is your consistency with your snaps. So if you're able to snap a ball that flies back to the punter at, you know, 0.62 seconds and you're putting it all over the place, you know, that's not going to be as valuable as a guy who can snap a 0.7 ball and put it on the hip every single time. So, you know, consistency is a huge factor in snapping and being able to, like you said earlier, stay cool, calm, and collected in the heat of the battle. You know, when we're on the road at Auburn and being able to put the ball on the holder's hands for the game-winning field goal, that's crucial, is being able to operate in those moments and being consistent at it and doing it very well.
How far, like if you're bent over right now, and I'm like, you know, quarterbacks talk about how far they can throw the ball. How far do you think you could snap the ball? Like how, like if you just, and to be accurate, not just to, you know, throw it like, you know, I don't know, 40 yards back or something. How far do you think you could go and be accurate?
To put it anywhere on the guy above his knees, I could probably do it at 20 to 25 yards. But, you know, snapping it just as absolute far as I can, I could probably snap it somewhere between 30 and 35 yards.
All right, so by the time, and we're talking to Blake Ferguson, he is the long snapper for LSU, and he hopes to be in the NFL next year. He's back for year five at LSU this year. So by the time the season starts, you know, like the first game of the year for LSU, how many snaps will you have done in practice now, starting, you know, with camp going on right now? How many times do you think you will have snapped the ball?
Oh, my goodness. I snap probably close to 60 balls a day times, I don't know, 20 practices. So
not an inordinate number. So the question I was going to ask you is, do you get tired? Like, does your neck get tired looking back between your legs and snapping like that all the time? Like, do you do yoga? Do you do anything to stay limber?
Yes, you have to. You have to be very flexible as a snapper, especially at this level. You know, I kind of equate being a long snapper to being a pitcher, like being a pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
Because you kind of reach that pitch count where, you know, you start throwing too much, you start snapping too much, your quality is going to decrease, and you're only creating bad habits. You don't have as much of the risk of getting injured per se, but you start creating bad habits and bad form. A lot of what snapping is muscle memory. So you don't want to create those bad habits and then you see them come around in the games.
Blake, I appreciate the time. Good luck this year. We'll be watching. I hope we don't notice you at all. That's Blake Ferguson at BFerguson50 on Twitter. Enjoy those LSU locker rooms. Thanks for getting up early with us, man, this Friday morning.
Thanks, Clay.
That is Blake Ferguson. I am Clay Travis.